afternoon and welcome to Tuesday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody should be with us shortly. Excuse me. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll free at 1-800-375-4188. Up front, please excuse my voice today. It appears my wife and I have caught another bug from our toddler grandsons. In any event, for the next hour, we'll be bringing you our opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day for Tuesday, February 7, 2023.
Good job.
Hey. It's Melody Cederstrom, everybody. Hello,
yes,
Melody.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with this technology. For some reason, it just doesn't allow me to start, and I have to reboot it almost every time at this hour. So something funny is going on. But anyway, it's great to be here. Thank you. And
hey, just wait until chat GPT takes over our lives, and all bets will be off.
Yes, I hear you. So what did you get? How far did you get? Did you get to the precious metals?
No, haven't gotten to the market report yet. I was just ready to wish you a happy Fettuccine Alfredo day.
Oh, I love fettuccine.
Yeah, we're going to have it tonight over some seafood. You know, today's also the day, nearly six decades ago, if you can believe that, that Pan Am Yankee Clipper Flight 101 from London Heathrow landed at New York's Kennedy Airport to 3,000 screaming fans. Beatlemania officially kicked off with the foursome's first visit to the U.S. You know, greeted by 3,000 screaming fans who nearly caused a riot when the boys stepped off their plane and onto American soil. And who can forget just 2 days later when the great Ed Sullivan announced, "Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles." It was a good time to be alive for sure, Melody.
I think I saw an interview with one of them. I can't remember, you know, and if I remember, they didn't like the fanfare. They didn't like the fans screaming because they couldn't hear, and they couldn't hear what they were doing. So it was difficult for them to perform, and they didn't like to perform under those conditions.
Yeah,
so they did not like all those screaming.
Yeah. Pipe down girls and boys.
Mainly girls, I think.
Well, whether it was the Ed Sullivan performance or Shea Stadium, watching those shows live, you could barely hear the music. I mean, it was more a cultural event than anything else.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Old Ed Sullivan.
There you go.
Yeah. So, okay, let's go ahead and get into the market reports today. We have gold today in the New York spot price aftermarket up 250 at 1870. Silver's down 11 pennies at 22.24. Platinum was up $4 at 984, and palladium was up almost 4% at 1728. You have the USDX today was down 0.27, but still at 103.35. Crude oil was up 3.21 at 77.32. And the paper markets today, 265 points to the upside, 34,156. And this is all in the back that the Powell says inflation is declining. Well, gee whiz, is it coincidence, you know, that tonight you don't have the – it's just, you know, of course he's going to say it's declining. And, of course, there's going to be a big response today. S&P was up 52 points at 4,164. Every administration does this, ladies and gentlemen, every single one. So – NASDAQ was up 226 points at 12,113. European markets were mixed. FTSE was positive. Asia markets, Nikkei was lower. 10-year yield 3.68%, and natural gas was up another 5 1/3% at 2.588. So, and again, it's Powell can go out there and talk about, rates can be more than expected. But, as long as he mentions that inflation is declining, that makes everyone very, very happy. And, of course, that's what he said today at the Economic Club in D.C. today. The disinflationary process, that's going to be their pitch. This is going to be their mantra, just like transitory was their mantra, where everybody was, now it's disinflationary process. It's beginning. The process of getting inflation down has begun. And it's begun in the goods sector, which is about a quarter of our economy. But it's got a long way to go. These are the very early stages, he says. And I'm not a fan of, he was in a question and answer session, Carlyle Group. That's just one of the elite groups, so I'm not a fan of theirs whatsoever. So naturally, he was with them. And asked whether it would have influenced the Fed's rate call if it had the jobs report before the policy meeting. Well, trust me, he did have the jobs report before. He says, "Oh, we don't get to play it that way." Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Come on. Who do they think they're kidding, Dave? It's a joke.
Well, he said if the data show that inflation is running hotter than the Fed expects, that will mean higher rates. He said the reality is that we're going to have to react to the data. So if we continue to get, for example, strong labor market reports or higher inflation reports, it may well be the case that we have to do more and raise rates more than is priced in. Now, he gave no indication of when the hikes will stop and said it probably will take into 2024 before inflation gets to a point where he and his cohorts feel more comfortable. He added that we expect 2023 to be a year of significant declines in inflation, quote unquote. It's actually our job to make sure that's the case. One could argue, well, if it's your job, why did it get like that?
Government likes inflation.
Indeed. Well, he finished by saying, my guess is it will take certainly into not just this year, but next, to get down close to 2%.
You know, what's funny, Dave, is because they're always saying that it was just the hot economy but they're not talking about where the economy has slowed down anywhere. You know, you get the big jobs report, that didn't slow down. So where did the housing market, they don't talk about it. Where did it all slow down to where it could have had an impact on their reasons for inflation?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in March now. Will the FOMC raise a quarter or a half a percentage rate to get investors, consumers' attention, businesses' attention? I don't know.
I mean, they're all giggly about, the GDPs. They're all giggly about, how the economy is going. And, we're going to hear about how great the economy is. Well, if the economy is so great, then how can inflation be going down? Because that was their cause or their reason that inflation was going up, was the economy was too strong. So, right? Am I wrong? Correct me?
It's all about mixed signals. Keep us confused and keep us wanting more from them.
Yeah, so the economy hasn't slowed down enough, but, there's another, the Fed's Bostic Ashari says, the Atlanta Fed, January's Bostic, said January's strong job report raises a possibility that the Fed will need to increase interest rates to a higher peak than policymakers previously expected. Well, that's not what Jerome Powell said. He thinks he's going to be down to 2% next year. So, but Bostic doesn't vote on policy this year. Said if a stronger than expected economy persists, it'll mean that we'll have to do a little more work. Well, you know, but that's not what you're hearing. They're all saying, hey, you know, hey, inflation's going down. We're in a disinflationary period. That's why the markets went up. He reiterated his base case for rates to reach 5.1% in line with the median policymakers' December forecast. The Minneapolis Fed President Neil Kashkari said that explosive jobs growth is evidence that the Fed is more wet, blah, 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 same thing. So we need to raise rates aggressively to put a ceiling on inflation, then let monetary policy work its way through the economy, really. So if they need to have a weak jobs report, like you said, so March is going to have to go from 517,000 down to what, 98,000? You know, it just doesn't make sense, Dave.
Yeah, again, there's a lot going on, and you've really got to spend a lot of time thinking about this have any kind of semblance of confidence in your positions here. Anyone who tells you GDP growth is going to be this percentage, and inflation is going to be that, wage growth this, that, don't believe them, because they can't know. These forecasting models, while impressive on one level, the inputs that go into them are almost always compromised by their lack of accuracy. So don't get too caught up in, I don't know, call it, what's the term I'm looking for? Stargazing or starstruck. Don't be too starstruck by these senior officials, because just a lot of Fed speak going on. I mean, when, you know, you're talking about Kashkari saying that the Fed funds rate he thinks needs to rise to 5.4% until they think about pausing. I mean, that's essentially 175 basis point additional increase than most of his, or majority of his colleagues said as recently as member meeting. So I don't know. Kashkari is a voting member of the FOMC this year, so perhaps his position has slightly more weight than, say, Bostic's. But don't forget, too, the Fed's also rolling off $95 billion every month in its bond proceeds and mortgage-backed securities, letting them roll off its balance sheet. And so far, that's resulted in nearly $450 billion of additional tightening. And yet the balance sheet is, what, still over $8 trillion? Let's put it this way. More rate increases are on the way.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing of it is, we're just not in a very rosy position. I mean, there are things that are going to, you know, happen this year. And again, you know, I wish things were better. I wish we didn't have the inflation. And it's just like anything else. You know, like I explained yesterday, you can have a can of coffee that went from $5 to $8 and now it's $6. It's still up a dollar. Plus it shrank. So, you know, there's so many ways they manipulate inflation. Our dollar strength made those imports cheaper. So that, you know, I don't know the percentage of an impact that it has on overall products and so forth, but it has to have had, I would think, some sort of a major impact to some degree. And I get we have little higher inflations in certain segments of various you know, that are probably overly, but as a whole, yeah, I mean, food prices are higher, but there's been shrinkflation for years, you know, going back to, Lord, the late 90s, they were shrinking products and maybe even longer than that, the shrinking, but mainly after that, shrinking products and keeping the packaging the same. And at that point in time, they could keep prices the same. But now it's different. They're shrinking it more, and the prices are going up. So it's not as hidden as it once was. So most people don't pay attention to things like that. So anyway, let's get going before we go. I really have, you know, I don't want to. I just need to skip this one, Dave, if that's okay with you. You know,
Just tell listeners about it because it's a major event.
Yeah, it's true, but I doubt if any one of the listeners will be watching it tonight, and that's the State of the Union.
Yes.
I watch it for as long as I can stomach it, and that's usually the first 5 minutes. Because it's all a dog and pony show, and there's so many mistruths that are handed out. This happens with every State of the Union, with every administration. I watch very few of them. And, you know, it's just things aren't going to be, most of us, things aren't going to be discussed what we want to hear, you know, and it's a big campaign. And, you know, again, it doesn't matter what administration is, it's a big campaign speech. So to me, it's just a waste of time. I don't think the State of the Union, and I don't know when the State of the Union addresses began. You know, how long they've been around. I once knew that. I once looked it up. But anyway, it's on tonight at 9 o'clock if you want to stay up that late.
If you can stay up that late.
But if you can't sleep, watch the first 10 minutes of it. And it'll make you, and it'll make you sleepy real fast. Or it'll either get you so fired up you won't sleep for the next couple of hours.
There you go.
You know. And I guess, and I'm not even sure everybody does like the rebuttal, which is going to be, what's her name? The Republican rebuttal. What's her name? The governor of Arkansas.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Huckabee Sanders, yeah. Is it Sarah? Sarah Huckabee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's going to do the rebuttal on the... And it's like, I wish they would have chosen someone else. Although I think her rebuttal will be very good. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Please make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter and blog that is edited and produced by our very own Dave Allen. dgscoins.com. And, you know, we want to talk a little bit. There's a lot going on about the dollar dominance coming to an end. And I have a good article here about a bipolar currency regime is going to replace the dollar's privilege. And this was by Noriel Rubini. He was, so it has a different aspects to it. So, I mean, it was interesting, like during the World Economic Forum, you had the Mohammed al-Jadan, Saudi Arabia's finance minister, expressed that the oil-rich nation was open to trading in currencies beside the U.S. dollar, and this is for the first time in 48 years. He says there are no issues with discussing how we settle our trade arrangements, whether it's in the U.S. dollar, the euro, or the Saudi rial. And again, this is just another signal that there's other nations around the world that are, plotting to do business in other currencies, the de-dollarization of the global economy. The dollar's dominance of global trade and capital flows goes back at least 80 years. Over the last eight decades, the U.S. has been the world's largest economy and certainly the most influential political entity and military force. But there's economists from different countries, other countries that are increasingly worried that the country has weaponized this position of power in recent years. The U.S. implements sanctions to punish countries in conflict, threatens to devalue its own currency to win trade wars, and leverages its own support in its own economy at the expense of the rest of the world and its citizens. Unsurprisingly, these moves have inspired a backlash. Of course, we've seen China, Russia, other countries. Even at the BRICS summit last year, Putin announced measures to create a new international currency standard. China has been urging oil producers and major exporters to accept the yuan for payments. So again, this rebellion against the U.S. dollar certainly is going to erode the influence. And but yet, there's some there that think that the greenback's dominance be sustained, that there's reasons to believe that it can be sustained. And that's what this article was more about. They didn't think it was going to be, the bipolar currency regime, of course, would be the U.S. and China. Because when you look at some of these other possibilities, and it was funny because I thought this was very amusing. This was said by the U.S., the former U.S. Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers. He said, Europe is a museum, Japan is a nursing home, and China is a jail. I thought, yeah, he's pretty accurate there.
Yeah, I like that.
It's very accurate. Although he didn't say what the U.S. was, though. So we can put in our own description there for the U.S., Dave. But
well, you know, back in the 1800s, the British pound was the world's reserve currency.
Yeah. We saw what happened to that.
Yes, we did, eventually. For the past century, the U.S. dollar has dominated because, well, because the U.S. economy is the largest in the world by far. And China slowed down in recent years. Some believe it won't ever overtake the U.S. At the same time, Russia, you know, for all its perceived military dominance, particularly decades ago, it's now the 11th largest economy. And that was before it invaded Ukraine. But it's smaller economically anyway than California or Texas alone. And India is growing rapidly, but this article says it would take 628% growth to match the U.S.'s GDP today. And they estimate that could take 25 years or more, making America's economic lead simply insurmountable. Well, I say short of a major depression here anyway. So, interesting, this development. Well, it's not, well, it's an ongoing thing. We've been talking about this now for the last 3 years, I believe, and Melody probably longer. See what goes on. I mean, the Chinese yuan could become more important for trade and cross-border payments, with the dollar remaining the preferred currency for central banks of developed nations. And I guess you could say that's far from an economic nightmare for Americans. There are other things that are keeping us up late at night, though.
But the thing of it is, it's all connected. And yeah. I don't believe you can. Yeah, and I don't believe you can be the major reserve currency of the world when there is so much debt that is backing it, and it's all based on the confidence. And when you have slowly, you have these other nations that are opening their currency exchanges and opening other to where they countries don't have to go through the SWIFT. To make these currency exchanges, it does bring and it does question the sustainability of the U.S. dollar being the reserve currency. And plus, when you have, you know, we're going to talk about the relationships with these nations too. I mean, it's a lot of big nations out there, and I'm not quite sure just how strong our economy is. When you look at, you know, it's, you know, jobs aren't coming back, wages aren't going up. I mean, that's the whole problem that everybody has, and that's not going to change. There's a lot of information about in 2025 how you have technology and AI that's going to replace millions and millions and millions of jobs. Now, how's that going to work in supporting a stronger economy? And so, yeah, so I think that the economics of things, and that means the amount of debt that's supporting the strength of the dollar, other countries know this. The weakness that we see in this country, I mean, how much more can taxpayers pay? Is my question. So I don't know. I think there's a, we got debt too great to be paid. Let's get back to basics. We got debt too great to be paid. Something will give. They can only manipulate the rates for so long. But yeah, you make our dollar stronger. It makes other things attractive. So it does attract these investments like Carlyle Group, the BlackRock, where they can move billions and billions of dollars to. So it's crazy, Dave, the interconnection, and then all the things, the off book accountings and that we talk about, these shadow. It's I don't know. I mean, you look at FTX. And he was just a little punk. How did a little punk like that get to do what he did without the support? And you can't tell me that, you know, everybody else didn't know that they actually thought this was a legitimate.
No one was looking.
That this was actually. Well, and look how many other FTXs are out there.
There are far too many of them. I mean, it's equivalent to the derivatives.
Yeah.
Fiasco of. To the, you know, the early 2000s.
And we still have a derivative fiasco. Well, they didn't go away.
It went away in the sense that it was no longer headlines, but you're right. It never has gone away. It may have been reduced for a short period, but it's been quickly ramping up. And we'll talk about that a little bit later if we have time.
So I think there is a change coming in our world's monetary policies. It is changing. And countries have been positioning themselves so that they can protect their own nations to the best that they can. So, you know, it's interesting. You know, we've been talking about the balloon. And, you know, there's a lot of questions out there about how is China going to respond to the balloon being shot down? I'm thinking about how is the United States going to respond to China for doing it? What's our response? Why should China even respond? They were in a place they shouldn't have been. They should have never crossed our airspace. But supposedly, Beijing is calculating a full response to its spy balloon being shot down. Well, what did they expect?
A lot of posturing going on there.
Yeah. China condemned the Department of Defense for destroying the balloon, saying the Pentagon obviously overreacted. Really? And seriously violated international practices? Well, did they violate international practices by coming in and coming across our border, coming across our whole United States? Aren't they the ones that violated international practices?
Yeah.
So, let's see. So, yeah, I mean, so it's unclear how long China could dwell on the balloon incident. I certainly believe we need to have an investigation into it and why our response was as poor as it was with NORAD and everything else. Beijing is claiming the unmanned balloon was a civilian airship that drifted over American soil by accident. Really? In today's world of technology?
Must have been some super high upper stratosphere winds, Melody.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really is. And they wanted us to handle this properly in a calm, professional, restrained manner. Well, I think we probably did for the most part, which we shouldn't have. But anyway, so.
Well, I'm just glad we found out about it. The American people.
Yeah, well, thank those people in Billings, Montana.
Yeah, that's right.
Or if they hadn't seen it, who knows if we would have found out about it.
I'm the practical joker in me. I'm a little mischievous here. If I were a senior member of the State Department, I think I would have been tempted to send my Chinese counterpart a dozen helium-filled balloons to his office Monday morning with a little appropriate note. Alas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, it's just, anyway, what have you say about this?
That's all I have to say about that.
All right. The U.S. trade deficit surged higher at the end of 2022. There we go. America imported $67 billion more than it exported in December, wider than the $61 billion trade deficit recorded in November, and, of course, well below levels of early 2022. The value of U.S. exports edged down $2 billion as imports moved up $4 billion. For the full year, the trade deficit was $948 billion, and that was a 12% rise from 2021. So it's kind of interesting, Dave. Do we have a breakdown of those deficits by chance?
Not a whole lot. I didn't spend any time looking, drilling down on that. I mean, we know that supply disruptions tied to the Russian invasion, to continued pandemic-related lockdowns in China, that and other factors curtailed demand for U.S. exports. But American demand for imported goods and services still remained elevated last year. This is one's interesting, the resurgence in international travel. American spending on travel overseas was $113 billion last year. That's more than triple the $34 billion in 2020. Plus, international traveler spending here, which counts as a services export in the trade math, was $134 billion, up 86% from $72 billion. In 2020.
Oh, yeah, 2020 would have been a very bad year for that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Massive shutdown.
Yeah, so, yeah. Stronger than expected demand for used vehicles last month led to another large increase in wholesale values since late 2021. And this is all according to Cox Automotive. This is from Manheim's used vehicle value index. That was down 12.8% in January from inflated pandemic levels, but it was still up 2.5% compared with December. So this is the largest month-over-month rise since the 3.9% jump from October to November 2021. So now the larger-than-expected increase in the index, now this tracks prices of used vehicles sold at its wholesale auctions, was in part the result of unseasonably high demand. Used vehicle prices have increasingly become a point of interest for investors at the administration as a barometer for easing inflation. So if used car prices go down, then we're saying that inflation is going down. That's the barometer.
It's one of them.
How about food? Food
would be another story.
Yeah.
Average list price of a used vehicle, $27,143 in December, down 4% from a year earlier. That does suggest a drop in retail prices coming as well.
All right. I hear the music. We're heading into the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Come on, baby.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio, Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Nothing like love, is there, ladies and gentlemen? One more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. You know where to reach her. 1-800-375-4188. I had a blog out last Friday called "The Fed Just Can't Help Itself." Or us, the Fed, the Bank of England, and the European Central Bank all raised interest rates last week, again, to fresh multi-year highs. They just can't seem to help themselves. At the same time, they each suggested or explicitly warned that there's more tightening coming, plus a willingness to hold their policies at these hawkish levels for a good while. Again, they just can't seem to help themselves. Well, much as I hate to say it, let's focus on the Fed, since we are the U.S. Inflation and all of its major drivers fell in the last half of 2022. And I'm not going to say it fell sharply or steeply or significantly, because some prices have come down, some even sharply, some just a tad, and some haven't at all. The so-called price deceleration occurred despite the pace of economic growth, which picked up in the second half of the year, and same time unemployment remaining fairly static. We know that the goal of the Fed's statutory dual mandate is to balance the risks of inflation versus the benefits of solid economic growth and maximum employment. Jeremy Bivens at the Economic Policy Institute points out that currently the benefits of low employment are enormous and the risks of inflation are retreating rapidly. This is what he wrote before the Fed's 25 basis point hike on Wednesday. Quote, if the Fed lets the current recovery continue quickly by not raising interest rates further at this week's meeting, 2023 could turn out to be a great year for the economic fortunes of American families. It's time for the Fed to stand pat on interest rate increases and wait to see how the lagged effects of past increases enacted in 2022 will filter through to the economy. Continuing to raise rates in the early stretches of 2023 will be a clear mistake and pose an unneeded threat to growth in the coming year. Now, he envisioned a Powell press conference on Wednesday after a meeting at which the Fed decided to leave rates alone, theoretically, emphasizing these points. Rapidly falling inflation in the fourth quarter, even without falling housing inflation coming fast, in 2023. Average wage growth of just 4.3% in the fourth quarter of 2022, down 30% from a peak of 6.1 earlier in the year, proving that wage growth can get back to normal without a ton of layoffs. I don't mean to minimize what's already happened to thousands of workers who've lost their jobs or who are finding it difficult to get another one. Just the fact is what it is. With corporate profit margins likely moderating this year, labor share of income will rise under that scenario, which has potential to absorb any wage growth that exceeds its long-run targets for years to come. Let's look at wages. It's a primary concern of inflation hawks. Over the last year or so, they've worried that rapid growth in nominal wages, that is, before the effects of inflation, would or could create that wage-price spiral. But wage growth is slowing down, and somewhat fast. There's a chart in the blog that shows the headline unemployment rate and the three-month change shown as an annual rate in wage growth since 2018. Bivens explains this in a little more detail in their report. Economists claim that 3.5% wage growth is the fastest rate consistent with 2% inflation. That's in equilibrium. Assumes that the share of overall income claimed by workers' pay rather than corporate profits remains constant. You know, getting a little technical here, but I mean, Bivens says that wage growth can be higher than 3.5% for a spell of time while still being consistent with 2% inflation if labor share of income rises. He doesn't say by how much, but he does point out that labor share of income has shrunk. Thus, just returning to the pre-pandemic labor force share of income should allow lots of wage growth without feeding through to price inflation. Conversely, he continues, this is like saying rising corporate profit margins have been a prime driver of inflation throughout this business cycle. It's a point you'd never see coming from Wall Street. But Bivens believes that, well, profits will stabilize or even contract in the coming year, supporting non-inflationary wage growth. That's what happens in just about every single business cycle since almost eight decades, when unemployment moved close to pre-recession levels late in recoveries. In short, Bivens concludes that on balance, the risks facing the Fed has moved decisively away from spiraling inflation. Key sources of disinflation, especially housing costs and a rising labor share of income, have yet to kick in, and inflation still fell rapidly in the fourth quarter last year. Thus, I agree that the Fed should hold off on future interest rate increases at least for a few months until we have more time to see how much more inflation comes down, given their action to date. If, however, they insist on continuing to raise rates in March and beyond, it will, as Bivens concludes, pose a dire threat to what could have been an excellent 2023 for America's working families. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, the Fed just can't seem to help itself or us. Our latest American Survival newsletter hit the streets this morning. In addition to Melody's weekly financial market recap and Doug Nolan's credit bubble bulletin, Wendy Wilson's food for thought on war and disease, I have an article called Janet Yellen Asks, How Can There Be a Recession? At Eternal Optimist, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says she sees a path for avoiding a recession, with inflation down significantly and the economy remaining strong, given that strong job market. She exclaimed, you don't have a recession when you have 500,000 jobs and the lowest unemployment rate in more than 50 years. What I see is a path in which inflation is declining significantly and the economy is remaining strong. Again, that was Yellen. Of course, being the team player she is, Yellen reminded us that inflation does remain too high. But she believes it could fall a lot more because of action taken by the Biden administration, including steps to reduce the cost of gasoline and prescription drugs. We shall see. Labor Department data out last Friday showed job growth jumped up steeply in January. Non-farm payrolls leaped by 517,000 jobs. And the headline unemployment rate dropped to 53.5-year low of 3.4%. The strength in hiring, despite growing layoffs in tech, overnight reduced investor expectations that the Fed was close to pausing its cycle of hiking interest rates. But here's the thing, and it's important. Unemployment isn't 3.4%. Unemployment in America is closer to 6.6%, roughly twice the 3.4 that politicians, pundits, and the media claim it is. Now, my article includes a chart from the St. Louis Fed showing a stark contrast between the government's headline U3 unemployment rate and its more encompassing U6 rate. I told you this before, but I think it bears repeating. The U6 rate measures the total number of employees in the U.S. that are a part of the labor force but are without a job. It differs from the near universally reported U3 rate in that it also includes workers who are discouraged and underemployed. Well, look, some say this distinction is like counting peas in a pod, that its use is fine as long as any historical analysis is an apples-for-apples comparison. But I disagree in a fundamental sense. I mean, U6 gives us a much clearer look at how the economy is functioning because it captures a much larger labor force. Even defined by the U.S., U6 is the U3 rate plus all people who are marginally attached to the workforce, that is, those who are neither working nor looking for work, but want and are available for a job and have looked for work sometime in the past 12 months, plus discouraged workers, that's a subset of the marginally attached, who have given a job market-related reason, as defined by the BLS, for not currently looking for work, plus persons employed part-time for economic reasons, that is, those who want and are available for full-time work, but have had to settle for various reasons for a part-time job. Well, she told Yellen, that is, told ABC's Good Morning America, that the economy continued to be strong and resilient, and that inflation nevertheless remained Biden's top priority. Pointed to three laws, the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS Act, and the massive infrastructure package that she said would help drive inflation down, along with the price cap imposed on the cost of Russian oil. Now, she also called on Congress to raise the nation's debt limit, warning that failure to do so would cause an economic and financial catastrophe. President Biden met with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy last week to feel out each other in the debt limit debate, and they've agreed to meet again, but the impasse has left investors feeling pretty gosh darn queasy. Although McCarthy did promise that Social Security and Medicare cuts will be off the table during these negotiations. I guess he's trying to deliver on promises he's made to fellow Republicans to reduce spending, but that gets a lot harder when major programs like that are exempt from cuts. Biden's outgoing chief economic advisor, Brian Deese, says to expect the president to insist that raising the debt limit is not negotiable and that lawmakers should not use it as a bargaining chip. McCarthy, whose fellow Republicans won a slight majority in November, said this, finding compromise is exactly how governing in America is supposed to work and exactly what the American people voted for just 3 months ago. Well, it's clear that Republicans want to use the debt ceiling, which covers the spending and programs, and tax cuts Congress previously approved, as leverage to push through additional spending cuts. Well, as someone who has worked among Washington policymakers and follows the federal budget process and its impacts closely, I believe that Congress has to once and for all remove standalone legislation on raising the debt limit. The time for these discussions is during formulations of Congress's annual budget and appropriation bills. Some have suggested that the least risky thing to do is simply suspend the debt ceiling and have it rise or fall based on the total spending and revenues in a given fiscal year. And you might think that that gives Congress a free rein to do as it pleases, i.e. to cut taxes and or raise spending ad infinitum. Well, they already have free rein in a nation with $31.4 trillion in gross debt. Instead, the nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget recommends these broad categories of reforms to the debt ceiling. First, link changes in the debt limit to achieving responsible fiscal targets, so Congress wouldn't need to increase the debt ceiling if fiscal targets are met. Next, debate the debt limit when Congress is making decisions on spending and revenue levels, not months after those decisions have been made. Then apply the debt limit to more economically meaningful measures like debt held by the public or debt as a share of GDP. And replace the debt limit with limits on future obligations, i.e. spending. Now, these reforms certainly aren't a panacea for what ails us, but they're an important part of a package of changes that I think we need if our constitutional republic is to survive, if not thrive, well into the rest of this century and beyond. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Hopefully, Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.